Riverbank Field. 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Here we are, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios live at Riverbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM as Gus Bradley has the Chargers looking over the Senior Bowl prospects this week from the South. He'll be coaching those guys up. We've got the Seahawks and the Patriots preparing to do battle in the biggest game of the NFL season. That would be, of course, Super Bowl 49. Tony, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a nice little Tuesday afternoon here. I know we're going to talk a lot of Senior Bowl today with John Osier and Ryan O'Halloran coming on. I know Ryan actually has an article up on Jacksonville.com, got the opportunity to talk to Blake Bortles a little bit about the offensive coordinator search, so we'll ask him about that, as Blake seems to be really involved in the process. I don't know that Gus is talking to Blake about what's going on, but Blake is certainly interested and involved with all these candidates, asking whoever he can get his hands on about what kind of guys these guys are.
You don't want the inmates to run the asylum, right? No. You don't want a guy who's going into his second year to have that much control. But doesn't it make sense that you would involve your quarterback in the process? Because the quarterback position has become so much the focus of team sports. It's the most important spot out there. And you just look at the guys that were left playing this past weekend, the four quarterbacks, you know, four of the top, what, eight in the game, and you might not even have to stretch a list that far to
right.
encompass those guys that were playing. It would make sense to say, hey, Blake, you know, we think we have a handle on what you like to do, what you feel comfortable doing, but let's talk about this in depth. What did you really like what you did last year? Where did you feel you were most successful? Where do you feel like you have room for growth? And how do you like to be coached? Doesn't that play a role in it too?
No, it would have to. And again, the article doesn't make it clear whether that's the conversation that's going on.
I would make that part of the conversation.
But it does make it clear that Blake Bortles sees the names of the guys that are coming in and interviewing, and he's talking to other players that have played with them, other coaches he knows that have coached with those guys.
Getting a sense.
To see what kind of guys all of them are. And look, as a fan, you have to love that your quarterback, whether or not the team is saying that they're involving him in that process to that degree yet, that your quarterback, even if they're not, is taking it upon himself to get to know these guys before they ever walk in the building is great. And he did mention the fact that, yes, they do have a passing camp set up that he's going to get. Everybody has been invited on the team that catches passes on offense, has been invited to come out to San Diego and involve themselves in a camp this offseason where they can just hang out, throw the football around a little bit.
Now, how did that – remember when the Sanchez used to do Jets West, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did he pay for those guys to come out there, or did he invite those guys to come out there? I'm really not sure how that works. I think Peyton Manning probably extends you an invitation, right, and just says, hey,
sure,
do you want to come work with me? And that's –
well, he's working on that. Big deal, baby.
Right.
Like, he can afford to get everybody
right
out there.
That's
I'm not
saying
that Blake can't.
Blake, well, I mean, he can.
He probably
can,
but you're cutting into a bigger chunk with Blake.
That's a higher percentage
right
of your take-home pay right there for the young quarterback. Although, going third overall, I think he'll do fine making the mortgage for the foreseeable future.
No, he probably will. And he's asking a bunch of guys that are on their rookie deals to come out and throw the ball with them. It's really Mercedes Lewis that should fit the bill on this entire thing.
He's a West Coast guy already.
That's right.
You know, have Mercedes fly back over to the East Coast, man. I don't know if he's doing this whole thing right, but maybe you're right. Maybe Mercedes does need to foot the bill. He's got the contract.
He does.
And he's the guy who needs maybe a good offseason to be sticking around here in Jacksonville. We'll see how that all plays out. Blake is going to go. We know he's going to be in Phoenix next Wednesday.
Yeah.
We'll see him on Radio Row. I was told this morning by Tad Dickman of the Jags Media Relations crew that Denard Robinson probably going to be out there. Jonathan Cyprian is going to be out there next week. Maybe some other guys. I heard Toby Gerhart last week might be out there. Don't you want to get to the point, Tony, where do you think, seriously, I don't, you've got a lot longer left in this business than I do, because
mm-hmm.
I'm old and I could go at any moment, all right? Let's say I have 10 years.
Right.
I knock on wood, I hope I have 20, okay? But let's say I have 10 years, and everyone out there is like, I hope you have 10 minutes, okay? I hope you're done at noon today. That we'll give you noon, and that's it. But if I keep doing this, we'll put this one behind us. We'll give you Super Bowl 49. By Super Bowl 60,
mm-hmm.
will we be talking to the Jaguars on media day? Do you really see, in sometime in the next 11 years, by Super Bowl 60. This is Super Bowl 49. Maybe it'll be next year. Maybe you're one of those pie-in-the-sky optimists. But out of the next 11 Super Bowls to come, will we be talking to the Jags on a Tuesday of Super Bowl week, which signifies they have finally made it to the big game?
I, like everyone else, hope so. I think next year is going to tell you a lot about whether or not it can be this regime that you're talking about it happening in the next 4 or 5 years.
Got to take a big jump in the right direction.
You
got to
take a big jump, and with the idea being that they're going to spend money in free agency this offseason for really the first time in team history, the way that they're talking about it, at least, to bring in a couple big-time free agents, hopefully. And if some of the guys that they've drafted in the top end of the last couple drafts start working out for them, I think that this team is capable of taking a pretty big step forward in 2015, but I think you have to see what it's going to look like in 2015 before you have an idea of whether or not this regime's going to work. And if it's not, then who knows? You know, I mean, where does that leave this team 2-3 years down the road if it's not going to work with Caldwell and Bradley? I think I like the plan. I generally like what they're doing. But until we see the results on the field, it's hard to completely buy into this idea that, yeah, they're going to be in the Super Bowl sometime in the next half dozen years.
How much of the gap between Indianapolis and Jacksonville, because they're the team at the top of the division, and for the foreseeable future with Andrew Luck, they're going to be there, but how much of it is simply Andrew Luck? If you took Andrew Luck and Blake Bortles off these two teams and gave them each a Ryan Fitzpatrick-level guy, right, just a veteran guy who's not going to get completely rattled, but he's not going to win you many games, hopefully not going to lose you too many games. How big is the disparity, if there is one, between the talent of the other 52 men on the roster, in your opinion? I don't think it's that big.
I don't think it's that big either.
There are a couple of guys that you can point to and say, wow, we don't have a receiver who's done what T.Y. Hilton has done to this point.
No, but you also had Andrew Luck throwing him the ball.
True.
I mean, that helps. I don't know that I think there's a big gap outside of that position. And Andrew Luck coming into the league was a much more NFL-ready prospect than Blake Bortles was. And the Jaguars knew that, and Blake knew that when he walked through the door. So when Blake is an NFL-ready product, what's it going to look like comparing those two guys? I don't know. Hopefully we find out in 2015.
What does your gut tell you, though? Next 11 years, will it happen?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Boy, it's really such an uphill climb. I mean, I don't care who you are. Look at Denver this year. They were loaded, right? They went out and got, Ware. They got, TJ Ward. They got Aqib Talib.
Believe me, I thought about it when we're talking yesterday about that collapse for Green Bay, right? And as good as Aaron Rodgers is,
the best in the game,
how many opportunities do you get to go to the Super Bowl?
He's been to one.
Right. And you go through an entire season of football, you put yourself in a position where you're up 19-7 late in a game like that, and you lose. How many opportunities like that do you have? Not everybody's Tom Brady. You know, where you go to the AFC Championship game 9 times, where you go to the Super Bowl 6 times. These are numbers that we've never seen before in the history of the National Football League. Guys like Peyton Manning. Manning's got one ring. As great as Peyton is, he's got one ring and he's played in 3. So if you're a Packers fan or you're an Aaron Rodgers fan, you know, they lose that game. How many opportunities?
You wonder if you're even
going
to ever get back there. You might never get back
right.
there.
Right. You just don't know
right.
how things are going to work out. And if Seattle can maintain where they're at right now, that makes the road that much harder for everybody else in the NFC.
And, right. In the NFC, it does. I think the one thing the Patriots have had going for them is the ability to dominate their division, right? So they're always in the conversation for a first-round bye.
Yep.
Always. Because they're going to win that division year in, year out. They dominate it. And with rare exception, that's been the case. And typically that means having the first weekend off. Numbers will tell you sometimes that's beneficial, sometimes it's not. But I think overall most teams would take it. I mean, to advance automatically to the divisional round of the playoffs, basically all it means is you have to win 2 games to make it to the Super Bowl.
But there's a turnover coming in the AFC. Sometime in the next handful of years, Peyton Manning's going to be done. Tom Brady's going to be done.
I think Brady's got considerably longer than Peyton.
I think so too. But I don't think Tom Brady's going to be playing football at this level still in 4 years.
Maybe not.
Over-under on Tom Brady, 4 years.
I think he'll play 4 years.
I think he'll
play four years.
I think that's about where we're at. And I think that you're talking about Blake Bortles and Andrew Luck and these guys coming into their prime. at that time, hopefully. So that turnover is coming at the right time if you're talking about sometime in the next decade for this team to go to a Super Bowl. Are the pieces around them good enough by that point for them to be that team that gets the opportunity to go do that? Look, what Peyton Manning and Tom Brady have done to the conference, it's been pretty incredible. And that Roethlisberger has played in three, it's pretty impressive. And Flacco made the run to go get his Super Bowl ring. I'm really curious to see what it's going to look like when Manning and Brady step aside, which is going to happen at some point in time, and it looks like it's going to happen pretty soon for Peyton Manning. What does the conference look like at that point?
It's funny because Flacco gets that ring. If Flacco doesn't hit Jacoby Jones with that deep pass
right.
and send that game to overtime, they lose the first round of the playoffs on the road, which you expect them to.
And what do you know? Denver's in a conference championship game with Peyton Manning.
I guess it wouldn't have been in the first round, or was that the divisional
round?
Right? Yeah, because they did win the week before, but they would have won a game and then lost, and then Flacco would never have taken them to the Super Bowl, and there'd be none of these conversations about is Joe Flacco elite or not, despite the fact that even with that occurrence, he would have an outstanding postseason record and a ton of road wins, more than anybody in the National Football League, even had he lost that game in the history of the league. And you look at him completely differently now, and you're like, wow, they got to it, they won it, Joe Flacco's a championship quarterback. Well, Joe Flacco, if Jacoby Jones has the ball bounce off his chest, does that make Joe Flacco any better or worse of a quarterback?
No.
No, it doesn't. And yet he would not have won a title, so he can't be deemed that championship quarterback. He'd still have the talent to do it. That's why it's just so damn tough, man. So many things. Look at all the things that had to go right for Seattle to advance yesterday. They've already got a ring. They may end up getting a second one. But damn, the margin of error is ridiculous. We'll talk about that a little bit. How tough will it be for Seattle to keep that squad together? Russell Wilson eligible for a new contract for the first time since inking his rookie deal after spending now 3 years in the National Football League. How well suited is Seattle to continue to dominate in the NFC if they give big money to Russell Wilson? And taking a look at Russell Wilson among the top quarterbacks in the league, how does he play? Or how does his winning and losing mark compare to other quarterbacks when he's outplayed at the quarterback position, as he clearly was this weekend? I mean, just about anybody would have outplayed Russell Wilson this particular weekend.
Sure.
Not that
you
Aaron
want to hear
Rodgers
a silly number, by the way, regarding Joe Flacco.
Sure.
You know, Tom Brady set the record for postseason touchdown passes this year. He surpassed Joe Montana. Brady now has 49 in his career. Montana is second with 45. Brett Favre third with 44, Peyton Manning has 38. Joe Flacco is ninth all-time in postseason touchdown passes. Ninth all-time already.
And he's played, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah.
Something like that. He goes to the postseason every year.
He missed it 1 year.
And he typically wins at least one game every time he goes. So that's a good way for it to add up quickly. Who are the other guys ahead of him?
It is Brady, Montana, Favre, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, Kurt Warner with 31, Terry Bradshaw with 30, and John Elway has 27.
Man,
Elway with just 27.
Yeah, and he went to 5 Super Bowls.
Right.
But it was a different era. It just shows you how much of a different era it was. You know, even the fact that Marino was up there, having only gone to 1 Super Bowl,
yeah.
You know, probably a lot of one-and-done years in the postseason for the Marino-led Dolphins, but guy was, anytime he played, he was liable to throw 2 or 3 of them at you, so... Interesting. How far does that list go down? Where's Russell Wilson rank on the list?
Let's see. Russell, I think, has 10.
Only in his third year, obviously.
Yeah, he's at 37th.
And not in a pass-happy
with
offense.
10. That's tied with Bob Greasy.
Oh, there you go.
Bob Greasy, the Hall of Famer, had 10 career postseason.
Did Bob Greasy ever cry like a little baby after team won the football game? I'm not sure if he did. That's fine. That's Russell. That's what he does. 6-4-1-10-10. If you'd like to get in today, we'll hear a little bit from Gus Bradley as he's getting ready to coach up the South squad in the Senior Bowl. We'll also check in with John Osier from Jaguars.com. He's on hand in Mobile, Alabama. That's coming up in about 20 minutes and coming up about an hour from now. Ryan O'Halloran gives us his take not only on that, but where things stand with the offensive coordinator search as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you today. Fan feedback spotlight today, focusing in on Super Bowl 49. Take the quarterbacks out of the equation, Brady and Russell Wilson. Other than the QBs, who is the most important player on each team in the Super Bowl 49 matchup? That is your fan feedback question of the day, brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida. You can tweet your responses at MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, and you can also, of course, go to Facebook.com/Jaguars today to weigh in on the conversation there. Phone lines open to you at 641-1010. We'll come back here a little bit from Gus Bradley. Jaguars today rolling on a Tuesday from Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Here with these players behind the scenes in the dining area, players' lounge, in the meetings themselves. They get a chance to hear the kids ask certain questions. How are they learning and picking up? And, you know, what kind of football concepts do they have and have they been taught so far? So it's a real plus for the two teams that coach the game, I think.
Phil Savage puts on the Senior Bowl. That was him talking about the perceived advantage. I think it is an advantage, certainly to some degree. You could apply to the later rounds of the draft for the Jaguar and Titan coaching staffs to get to coach the South and North, respectively. I don't know how much you glean from the other team, Tony, although they did draft Brandon Linder, who played for the North team last year.
Yeah.
In addition to the two Smiths and Aaron Colvin that the Jags coached themselves last year and got a better look at it. I think it's got to be, you know, a pretty significant advantage. It really surprises me that any team turns down the opportunity to have the extra access to these guys, to be in the meeting rooms. I mean, as Phil said, you get to see him in the cafeteria. You get to see you sneaking an extra bowl of Fruit Loops. Is this guy going to be a sugar fiend later right on down the line? But I do think it's a big deal for Gus Bradley and his staff. And you don't want to be in position. It means you're drafting near the top of the draft. You don't want to be in position to coach a Senior Bowl, but if you are, take advantage of it.
Yeah, you try to take advantage of it, and like you said, yeah, they may have drafted Linder off the North team last year. Not sure how much access they get there, but look, every team's out there scouting at the Senior Bowl. If you have the opportunity to coach, it just means you get that much more of a scouting report on all those guys, get to know them a little bit, the relationships get built up a little bit. I know talking to Telvin Smith, when he got drafted here, he talked about that and having spent that week with Gus Bradley and this coaching staff and how comfortable he was with these guys and how excited he was to be a part of the Jacksonville Jaguars having known those guys for a week. So I think that you can take advantage of opportunities like this. You're going to scout the North team anyway. So Linder may have been a target. I don't know how much access you get, but look, whatever advantage you can take, especially when they are handed to you and not Deflategate or something where you have to push the rules to get the advantage that you want, take advantage of it if you're the Jags.
And if all it costs you eventually is a $100,000 fine and a fifth round pick, they'll take Deflategate too.
Gosh.
If you would take, we'd all take Deflategate if you knew it was the difference between your team going to the Super Bowl or not. And if you read the story yesterday, DeQuell Jackson made the interception against Tom Brady and therefore had the ball in his hands and went over to the equipment guy on the sideline and said, "Hey, something wrong with this ball, man. This ball didn't seem right." And whether it was him or the equipment guy who really noticed the pressure seemed to be off, that started the chain of events.
Yep.
That basically kicked it up the ladder. Chuck Pagano was having none of it yesterday. He didn't want to talk about his role in the situation. He said, look, every coach gets to talk to the refs before the game. It has nothing to do. We're not talking about before the game, Chuck.
Right.
What does that, any of that have to do with anything? Because Pagano kicked it up to their general manager, Ryan Grigson, during the game. So that's how the whole deflated ball got rolling, apparently, yesterday. So whatever the case, I really don't think the Patriots give a damn. And if you're talking about that kind of stuff, you're not – you know, that's probably not even a distraction in their minds. It's not even something they're thinking about. You know what I mean? And you'd probably almost rather have something silly like that to come up. You want to spend half your time at Media Day asking us about inflated or deflated footballs? Go right ahead. Honestly.
No, but it is an interesting story because it's the Patriots.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if this was the first time we'd ever had something like this attached to the Patriots, you could kind of shrug it off because it sounds kind of dumb, you know, deflating footballs. But it's because we've had these other stories that involve the New England Patriots and pushing the boundaries of what is and isn't allowed to happen. And I still contend that, you know, you don't get caught doing something like that the first time you do it.
Probably not.
You know, you've probably done it before.
You ever get caught doing something the first time you did it, though? You probably have.
Me? No.
Somewhere. Never?
No. No.
You think you get better at it, Tony. You should never get caught.
But if you find something that gives you an advantage and you don't get caught doing it, usually you go back to things that help you. You know, I mean, that kind of idea. But, I mean, were they using deflated balls against Baltimore in a 35-31 game? Who knows?
Well, it wasn't pouring rain
right
in that game.
But who knows how many times they've used that to their advantage if they're willing to use it in an AFC championship game against a team that they have completely outmatched and didn't need the help anyway.
Or well, and you don't know that before it kicks off. You don't know how a game is going to go. You may feel like you have a pretty good edge based on their track record against Andrew Luck. It hasn't been close every time they played now, four times in his brief career. But you don't take that for granted, I think, and that's probably the story of Bill Belichick. He didn't take anything for granted. He's a great coach, but much like I compared it to yesterday, you can be a great player like Barry Bonds, and people say, well, he belongs to the Hall of Fame. He was great before he cheated. Then why did he cheat?
Right.
You know, I can't separate the two, and I'm not saying anything. The deflate gate, whatever. I mean, you know, gate, everything's gate since Watergate. But, you know, honestly, the thing that hangs the cloud to me over the Patriots organization is the fact that Goodell's office destroyed the tapes of Spygate. Destroyed them. Didn't make a, look, if there's nothing there, clearly there was something there, or they wouldn't have gotten the fines that they got. And I want to say forfeiting a draft pick as well, if I'm not mistaken, but I want to say it was like a $100,000 fine, which was pretty high in the scope of things for the kind of things they penalized. So certainly they felt something had happened at that point in time. And then they took it upon themselves to destroy the evidence so nobody else could see what was going on. That's the kind of thing that perpetuates, I think, the feeling about that organization to some degree. Brad Piper, 3 on Twitter tweeting, well, you want to know what happens when Brady retires? They still win. Why? It's the system they run. Ask Matt Castle, 11-5 with Matt Castle at the helm. Yeah, that's coming off 16-0. 11-5 is great. You had a team that was arguably the best regular season team in the history of the National Football League, and you lost 5 more games the next year. That's so, you know, it's one thing if you're going 16-0, you can drop to 11-5 and still be a contender, and they missed the playoffs, by the way, anyways. This is kind of one of those fluke years. But if you're an 11-win team, you can't lose 4 or 5 games off the top and expect to just plug anybody into that situation. There's going to be some growing pains as that team turns over. You know, Vince Wilfork, what's he got left? I mean, if this is his last productive year, nobody's going to be shocked
right
at that degree. Where's Darrelle Revis going to be in 3 years from now? You have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, Gerard Mayo, are his best days already behind him? You know, they played without him most of this year.
And that's really what's been so impressive about this New England run is they've recreated themselves 3 times under the umbrella of Belichick and Brady. I mean, they've just found a way to do it so many different ways. With that football team, it started with a very strong defensive team. They ran the ball well in Brady's first couple of years. Then they added a guy like Randy Moss. That offense was just electrifying there for a year or two. And now they've found a way again. They just scheme you to death. They find ways to take advantage of what they do well and what you don't. And there's been nobody better in the past 15 years in the NFL of taking away what you want to do than Bill Belichick. Nobody's been better at it.
Couple of quick thoughts here from Gus Bradley. Brian Sexton on Jaguars.com caught up with Gus. You can, and we encourage you to listen to the interview in its entirety at Jaguars.com. But a couple of quick things. One, Brian asking Gus if he has been able to relax yet and take a little breathing time with everything that's been going on with the OC search and now getting ready to coach the Senior Bowl.
I don't know if I have, but it's been a really good, challenging experience. You know, you're finding out a lot about a lot of people, a lot of organizations, and you find out there's a lot of good candidates out there.
Coach Bradley also talking about if he's feeling pressure in that offensive coordinator search. I mean, everyone around the league's getting their hires, head coaches in, offensive coordinators in. The Jags still in the middle of this search. Is he feeling the pressure to get this thing done?
I think just following the process and just trusting it. You know, you get a chance to, you're trying to put together a team and with your staff as well. And I think, you know, you're trying to fit personalities, what our objective is, and really try to meet the needs of the organization and the players.
All right, so what's the challenge now? You're trying to juggle a couple of different important things here. You're searching for an offensive coordinator. At the same time, you've got to coach with the staff you have, getting these guys ready. How do you balance that out?
You know, we always say we love challenges, so it's a great challenge. I think, you know what, to be around these guys, I remember it from last year, the spirit, the enthusiasm, and, you know, the challenge is to build a team really in a week. These guys have, you know, agendas maybe on their mind, and we got to kind of eliminate those and bring us together as a team.
you don't want to do this every year, coach the Senior Bowl, but Coach Bradley was asked if he's excited to be there doing it again.
I do, because we say we're always going to compete to get better, find ways, be unconventional. This is a little unconventional, but I think to be around these guys is so helpful in getting to know these players in a short period of time, and it helps us with the draft. As we got some good players from the Senior Bowl last year, so it's very effective, and we really look forward to the opportunity.
There's your head coach, Gus Bradley. Again, listen for more with Brian Sexton at Jaguars.com for the complete in-depth interview. We'll talk with John Osier coming up here in about 6 or 7 minutes, and Ryan O'Halloran next hour, both live from Mobile for the Senior Bowl. Dan Hicken will be arriving today. We'll get him on over the course of the next couple days as well. Before we go to the phones here, quickly, Tony, ESPN Stats and Info tweeting out some interesting numbers. We'll look at these numbers a little bit more in depth after the Honda drive around the NFL, but a comparison of Tom Brady and Russell Wilson in their first 3 years in the league, and extremely comparable. You couldn't tell that they're so near each other, you couldn't have any idea who had one set of stats, who had the other. It's really remarkable. First comment, very first comment, just some guy commenting on the story, and his reaction was, and Wilson didn't cheat to get these numbers, to our knowledge. And so it's funny that it's hanging out there. And I think more people say it tongue in cheek than anything.
Right.
But, there are some guys out there that, some players in the National Football League that have gotten pretty fired up over the whole issue as well. Let's get Billy up first today on Jaguars Today. 641-1010 is the number. Good morning, Billy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I mean, earlier in the season, you had Aaron Rodgers say that he likes his balls overinflated because it helps him grip it better. I mean, it could just be a matter of that, Tom Brady likes it on the low end, and the cold weather just made it a little bit, cold weather's going to compress the air, irregardless, I mean, I just think that they're blowing it out of proportion, because in the second half, even after the referee changed the ball, we still blew them out. I mean, we just increased the lead. It ain't like it was just, oh my God, the Colts are coming back now. No.
Nobody's saying that, and we gives away your rooting preference, obviously, but, nobody's saying they needed to do that. That's the point. The perception is Belichick will do anything whether he needs to or not. And some people will say, well, you do everything you can within the rules. Well,
that's why there are rules.
Right. Or does he do everything he can beyond the rules at times? He would probably argue no. I don't know. At least in his heart of hearts, I don't know what he would argue.
Right.
I don't know if he did anything. This thing isn't even a story if this is, if Indy had done it, for instance, and one of the Patriot players had mentioned, hey, that ball seems a little deflated. For one thing, the Colts lost. And for another thing, they don't have the reputation that Belichick has. I mean, Don Shula, who is one of the grand statesmen of the game, called the guy Belichick, something that a yokel sports radio guy like myself would say. This is Don Shula
not
talking.
One of the most well-respected coaches of all time.
Of all, maybe the most respected, the Mount Rushmore of coaching in the National Football League. Don Shula's got his granite face on there somewhere. So, anyway, regardless, it's not going to impact how they play in the Super Bowl.
It's not.
It's just another footnote in the interesting legacy that's been the Belichick Brady era in New England. Coming up next, John Osier, senior writer for Jaguars.com. He'll join us to talk Senior Bowl here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Happy Tuesday to you, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We're live at Everbank. Johnny O, the senior writer for Jaguars.com, is live, awake, ready to rock and roll in Mobile, Alabama, the epicenter of the football universe, at least until we get to Phoenix next week. John, how are you?
It's nothing like being live in Mobile. Better than the alternative, right?
Well, dead in Mobile is nobody any good, John. Does no one any good whatsoever. I'm sure by now you have an exact list of not only who will be the offense coordinator, but the moment of the hire, at what time of day the contract will be signed. Seriously, any scuttlebutt new since we talked yesterday on the offensive coordinator front for the Jags?
Not really. Gus and Dave got in yesterday. The staff arrived and talked to Gus. And, because there's so many moving parts, and by that you mean people still on staff not sure what their futures hold.
Right.
They're just not talking very many specifics. Again, as I said yesterday, I expect this to happen this week. I think well before Saturday. Our Jaguars.com crew rolls out of here Thursday night. I would expect something before then, because it just feels like if they don't get something done before then all of a sudden, you know, the clock is ticking. You know, the chairs are being taken up in the game of musical chairs. But if they get something done in the next couple of days, and it's the names we're talking about, some combination of Marone, Olsen, and, you know, I've talked to so much I'm drawing a blank. Case, yes. Gase, somewhere in there. You know, I think Gus, through this long search, has come up with some options and an approach that makes kind of sense. Adam Gase is, you know, to be in on him right now, whether it happens or not, I think you still have a good combination that you can find something to work out of.
You know, John, I think a lot of fans have been surprised by how long this process has taken, and they're watching other teams around the league fill these head coaching spots, fill these offensive coordinator spots, and wondering why Jacksonville, who was among the earliest to kind of throw their hat in the ring knowing what they were going to be looking for, hasn't gotten it done yet. Have you been surprised at all that it's taken nearly a month for them to, I mean, if they do get it done this week, for them to figure out who that next coordinator is going to be?
At first, maybe, and then you start looking at it, you know, I think your question is the question a lot of fans have, and that's where you've got to kind of draw the delineation point. Head coaches and coordinators, you really can't measure it against the head coaching search that's going on at other teams, because that's what they were waiting for in some cases. A guy like Greg Olsen really couldn't move on him until something happened in Oakland that was official. And then as soon as that happened, if you noticed, Olsen got involved, and that was the name you started hearing. So there was a case of waiting on positions that everybody assumed were going to happen, but you really couldn't talk to people yet until what people assumed was going to happen had happened. So you're waiting for somebody to go hire a guy, come back and say, okay, yes, this staff is truly available rather than sort of available. So, you know, in that respect, no. I'm not sure that it's really taken that long in the sense that they wanted to make sure that some of these guys who they thought were going to come available were guys they talked to, and they had to do their due diligence on that. So it feels like a long time. I don't know that in actuality it matters that much how long it takes.
John Osier here with a senior writer for Jaguars.com on the Garber Auto Mall hotline. John, at the top of the show, Tony and I were just talking about the fact, you know, we're going to another Super Bowl to cover it next week, and we're talking about the Jaguars, who are expected to be in Phoenix and possibly making an appearance on Radio Row. And we sat there and said, boy, if I'm lucky enough to stay in this business for another decade or so, let's say by Super Bowl 60, it's Super Bowl 49 this year. Can't get into this one, John. It's too late for that. Next 11 Super Bowls.
The odds are against it.
The odds are really uphill that they'd play in 2 weeks for the Super Bowl championship. Next 11 games by Super Bowl 60. I mean, it's a hope of all of ours that the Jags would go to a couple of them. But what does your gut tell you? Do you think, I mean, or is it just an impossible thing to even try and predict whether or not they can even make it to one in that time frame?
Well, you know, sure they can. It doesn't take 10 years to turn a thing around. I mean, that's not how it works. On the other hand, I think sometimes you get a sort of guilty of tunnel vision a little bit. And what I mean by that is Seattle is a dominant franchise right now. And the Patriots are a dominant franchise right now. Well, everybody sort of sees those dominant franchises and says, oh, there's tons of dominant franchises out there. Well, there's a handful. And a franchise in its existence often doesn't have that many opportunities to get there. So, you know, the guys in charge have to do a really good job, and you really usually have to get a really good quarterback and have some things really go right, and then have some breaks to go along the way. I mean, look at Seattle. Probably the dominant team in football came very close to not getting there. The Jaguars in 99 came very close to getting there and ran into one team that couldn't do it. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, yes, they can do it, but it's hard. I mean, there's a reason you've got a lot of highly paid people in 32 cities chasing one dream. It makes it really, really hard. So, you know, I think they will, because I think Shad Khan overall, even taking the people who are here running this right now out of the equation, because you're talking about 15, 20 years, who knows what happens in those positions. But Shad Khan is dedicated to getting this done. He's trying to learn from every mistake. He's involved. So, you know, that gives you a shot to get it done. And then things have to happen that sort of, play out correctly.
Is there a storyline?
Sometimes it's luck.
Yeah. Is there a storyline or two that you have your eye on this week as senior bowl practice is about to get underway?
Well, it was interesting to listen to some of the people talk yesterday. They had Bryce Petty talking, and, you know, quarterbacks are always sort of the theme. And, you know, everybody's sort of looking for that number three quarterback right now. You know, Bryce Petty might be it. The kid from Alabama might be it. There might be different guys that can sort of step into that role. And I think the Senior Bowl is the start of that. Now, I don't think that guy is going to be in the first round of the draft. But after those first two go, Winston and Mariota, teams are still going to be looking for quarterbacks who can develop, who can maybe turn into the guy. And, you know, Senior Bowl is a place where that starts, because that's where they start seeing a pro-type offense.
What do you get to say? Brett Hundley is kind of the consensus guy right now. It just shows you how much things can change in a year. There was a lot of talk last year if he came out, he would have been a top 10 pick. Of course, that's what they say then, and then the process plays itself out. We all pick them apart during the combine and their pro day workouts. But Hundley seems to be the guy. It does seem to be a pretty uninspiring class of quarterbacks overall, John. I think if you go back to Dave Caldwell's comments about Blake Bortles, had he come back to school, he felt he would have been the top quarterback on the board. There's really only two other guys he'd even be in competition with this year.
Yeah, and yeah, they do advanced scouting on that level, so, certainly. And that was part of why, hey, we've got a chance to go get our guy now. Who knows what next season brings, and all of a sudden, you know, you're left still looking for a guy. As you said that, I thought, isn't it funny how every year we not only talk about a Brett Hundley who all of a sudden is a different kind of prospect than he was this time last year, but that's how it is at every level of this game, isn't it? This time last year, we were talking about an entirely different bunch of coordinators who were hot guys.
Right.
An entirely different group of people who were head coaches. And it all changes so much based on, you know, maybe one or two games that happened in the course of that season. It's such a reactionary league and such a reactionary fan base. But even the league, the people running the league are so reactionary in this kind of a thing that after you do it for a while, it does sort of make you laugh of, you know, is this guy really that much better a head coaching candidate now than he was 2 years ago for a guy who gets a job? So much of it is, you know, sort of how things come together, what coordinators are available when a head coach hires a guy. I'm not saying it's all luck, but certainly timing and good fortune play into a lot of things in this league.
The Jags obviously took advantage of being out at the Senior Bowl last year, drafted a handful of kids that they had coached at the Senior Bowl there in Mobile. When you look at what this team is going to be looking to do maybe in the back half of this draft, where does the depth at the Senior Bowl line up with what the Jags may be looking to want to draft when we get to late April?
Well, you know, everybody says right tackle. And there are certainly, you know, I sort of think, and I think a lot of people do, you would rather look in free agency for something on the offensive line because they're so young. But there are certainly offensive tackles here. Collins from LSU is here, maybe a left tackle. The kid from Pitt, T.J. Clemmings is a guy who may be playing his way into maybe late first round, maybe in that second round. Is that an area the Jaguars go early in the draft if they can't find the right guy at right tackle? Because remember, with free agency, as we've all talked about, all of a sudden, if that pool runs out, you don't want to go out and hire a guy in free agency, which is what you're doing, who doesn't fit. So that's when you might look at some of these Senior Bowl guys, like you say, you know, defensive end, there's some pass rushers here that if you don't get it in the first round, might make sense on day two or day three. There's so many names that it's hard to know until the week gets started the feel for guys they're going to get from being around the South team. I don't know if they thought until this time last year today that they liked Aaron Colvin the way they did. And then all of a sudden they saw him before he got hurt, and they just fell in love with the guy. So that's the process that will be interesting to watch for me in the next couple of days.
All right, John, what can we watch for from you in the next couple of days at Jaguars.com?
Well, hopefully there's a there's a coordinator story, right? I mean, I think
that'd
that's what everybody's refreshing all the pages for. I mean, and that's a big story until it's not. The media will get Gus today. We'll all talk to Gus, and you know, if he sheds a little more light on it or has something, then that'll be the main story the rest of the week. After that, we have live coverage from the Senior Bowl practices. Brian Sexton and I will be going live. We'll be doing inside the Jaguars, trying to get you as close to B&O here as you possibly can.
Very cool, because we don't want to get any closer than we have to, actually, to going to Mobile. So we're glad you do that for us, John, as our eyes
and ears. Mobile's a very underrated city now.
Is it?
Especially this time of year. It's a good little city to have this game.
Well, if you were ranking Mobile, what city would be right in front of and right behind Mobile in the city rankings?
Well, Fairhope's right across the river, so I'd put Fairhope, Alabama there.
Okay.
And, whatever city's on the other side of Fairhope.
All right.
I'll
so
check
that's
Google
where it would nestle in just like it does geographically.
That's exactly right.
All right, John. Hey, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
Guys, thanks a lot, bud.
All right. There he goes. John Osier on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Before we break, Tony, a little Twitter exchange going back and forth with Terry at Terry0806. Says, let's see, talking about Belichick, I believe. So he's a cheater. Actually, this he made the point, how can you be, why don't you call a cheater? And, you know, a great coach cannot be a cheater, something along those lines, mm-hmm. right? So I made the point, I said, well, I think you can be both. You know, I think Barry Bonds was a great player. I think he's also a cheater, okay? I don't think he needed to cheat to add to his greatness, but he felt like he needed to. I think Belichick's a great coach. Does he occasionally cheat? Possibly. I mean, cheating is a strong word. We still don't know. He did something in Spygate that incurred the wrath of the NFL and drew some pretty harsh penalties. Did he cheat and material gain an advantage? Perhaps so. But if you look at him consistently year in, year out, week in, week out, game planning for specific opponents and the coaching plans he puts together to shut guys down on a weekly basis, I think he's a phenomenal coach.
Yeah.
Does he possibly cheat to enhance his chances of winning? Absolutely so. Does that mean he's a cheater or a great coach? Could be both, right? So trust me, I'm shocked that anybody who claims they've listened to me for several years, which Terry does, thinks that I don't like to rail on cheaters. I mean, my goodness, when we did an all-sports show, I loved going after Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and the whole lot of them. Which, by the way, great players in their time.
Absolutely.
Which is the shame of it. When you have someone who's so good at what they do, and they're not satisfied with a certain level of excellence and accomplishment, that they have to show you that, hey, everybody else is cheating. No, do it clean, and you will be... Imagine if Barry Bonds had stayed the same dimensions physically throughout his career, and there was nothing you could point to, and he hit, instead of hitting 760 some odd home runs, he hit 585 as a skinny as a whip guy who could steal all those bases and do all those things. We'd be lauding him as a guy who resisted temptation. Would he be the greatest home run king of all time? Nobody really considers him that now anyway.
But he would be one of the greatest baseball players of this generation, if not the best.
Right. Arguably the best of the generation and one of the best of all time, regardless. Which he was, he had that talent, he was that kind of player, and he cheated on top of it. So a lot of his accomplishments are due to cheating, but some of them aren't.
The conversation is, for some people, and it makes sense, if you feel like Bill Belichick has cheated to get
he's a cheater,
got,
period. And I get that.
Then it can diminish your opinion of his accomplishment.
I think it can.
And if it's going to do that, that's fine. Everyone can take that on a person-by-person basis, how they feel about the stories that come out about Bill Belichick in New England.
Right, but to sit here and say we're just putting these guys on a pedestal, which is what we're saying. Look,
he's still really good at what he does.
It's hard to argue that Bill Belichick's not a great coach.
Right.
Right. And you can talk all you want about Spygate and, you know, did other teams do this or did they not do this? I really don't know the extent to what it went on. I do think he did something to try to gain an advantage that was outside the rules. So, yes, I do think he cheated. And has any other coach, is every other coach squeaky clean? Should we give credit to Chuck Knoll? Even if he didn't cheat, if his team was pumping themselves full of steroids, the Pittsburgh Steelers back in the 1970s, which, pretty much anyone who chronicles the time now believes that a lot of the key guys did. I don't know. You know, do we take that away from Chuck Knoll? Because he did it with players that were cheating by one definition of the term.
Sure.
You know, you can go any way you like.
Yeah.
That. All right. Coming back, this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. And coming up next hour, Ryan O'Halloran checking in live from Mobile as well. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Joe Fortunato's favorite segment, by the way. Just thought I'd pass that along. He's hanging out with the boys.
It's everybody's favorite segment.
It really is. I know Loggy likes it. I don't know about everybody, but Loggy likes
it. Loggy always has a story.
He knows that. Half the people right. We talk about, old man. Super Bowl, how about Super Bowl 14, Tony? Pittsburgh Steelers over the L.A. Rams. 31-19 in Pasadena. Not even really as close as I recall as the score indicated.
Mm-hmm.
I rooted for anybody at that point to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. LA Rams couldn't get it done. I want to say Vince Ferragamo days. And also on the date, 1985, it was Super Bowl 19. 5 years later, San Francisco defeated Miami 38-16 at Stanford Stadium. Back in the day in Palo Alto, Joe Montana, your Super Bowl MVP. Terry Bradshaw was the one before that. Quarterbacks frequent Super Bowl MVPs. Matt Barr's field goal with no time left gave the Giants a 15-13 victory on this date over the defending Super Bowl champion San Francisco 49ers back in 1991 for the NFC title, propelling them on to O.J. Anderson's epic day and Super Bowl victory over the Buffalo
Bills.
Jeff
Hostetler leading the Giants to a Super Bowl championship.
Birthdays today, I got opposite ends of the spectrum for you. Got Rich Gannon, former league MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Got Dion Figures, good old Jaguar cornerback from back in the day. And I got Ray Carew. Should have stopped it, too.
Yeah, those are way opposite.
They're all over the board with that trio right there, as far as that goes. Ray Carew, currently serving time and hopefully for a long, long time. He was born on this date in 1974, much to the dismay probably of many out there. The state football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located in town right here on Gate Parkway, 620-9225, the number. Cosmetic work, family dentistry, you name it, they can handle any situation. Dr. McCall is a certified Invisalign provider as well, and he'll give you 10% off your first-time customer initial visit. Go to jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
We mentioned this earlier in the show, but for those that were wondering where the investigation into Deflategate began, we may have an answer now. The Colts got crushed on Sunday night, but before the crushing began, linebacker DeQuell Jackson intercepted Tom Brady at the goal line. When he brought that football to the sideline, handed it to a Colts equipment manager, the guy noticed that it was a little bit underinflated. He handed it to his head coach, Chuck Pagano, who handed it to his
cheaters!
General manager, who apparently handed it to the league. And on it goes. Tony Verna, probably not a name that you know. That is the name of the CBS producer who came up with the idea for instant replay on television. Seems pretty simple right now, considering you can get 5 different angles of replay after every single play of a football game on television. But it was Tony Verna in 1963 during a TV broadcast of the Army-Navy game that had the idea to show a play again between plays so that the audience could get another look at it. Verna passed away at the age of 81 on Sunday, but he was the one. He's probably the reason that football became as popular on television as it has. The use of replay on TV with football has been key in its growth, and that's the guy who came up with the idea. And the way that it worked, evolved, just on the day that it happened, is pretty crazy considering the technology they were trying to use.
Back in the day, and this is a story he told an outlet called the Pacific Standard a couple of years ago, obviously a couple of years prior to his death, which just occurred, that prior to that game, networks needed about 15 minutes to queue up film and show a play for the second time. 15 minutes!
15.
So that was distant replay at best, not instant replay.
Here's what happened in the last quarter.
Right. Here's what happened about a quarter ago, ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea, Mr. and Mrs. America. To do it in 15 seconds, they said, required an innovative approach. It featured some fits and starts and setbacks, including vacuum tubes burning out, and a replay having to be scrapped because, get this, the film that they use, and this is actual, like, hard copy film, okay? Think of previous hard discs, okay? It had been used to record an episode of I Love Lucy. And on playing it back, Lucy's face was still superimposed over the football field.
That would have been awesome.
Oh, my goodness. He's just so ridiculous.
It was great. They finally figured it out. They had it the way they wanted it after a touchdown. And the TV announcer is having to tell everybody because they've never seen anything like this before, right? You just saw a touchdown, and all of a sudden they're showing it to you again before the extra point is kicked, and he's having to tell everybody, they did not just score again. This is a replay, America.
This is not live, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a fact of point spread
You're
whatsoever.
Seeing it again.
And 1963 and living Technicolor. I doubt it.
And I could see the hatches popping off gentlemen's heads in their living room.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! We're seeing it again, honey. We're seeing it again. But, dear, this is going to stretch a game out to at least an hour and a half. You wait. You wish it would stop at an hour and a half.
Oh, goodness.
Jason Black and Ford reporting that the Bears have hired or will hire 49er defensive coordinator Vic Fangio. Washington was said to be in play for him as well. That's according to Lock and Fora. He's going to join John Fox up there. And let's go to the phones, get a call in quickly. We got Ryan O'Halloran coming up on the other side. MJ, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, I just had a just a quick comment from the last segment. Don Shula back in the day, he was given a playbook for the Raiders. He absolutely told them to return it, didn't look at it, and all that. Now, if the shoe was on the other foot, Belichick would have ran out of that tunnel in front of the players on game day doing cartwheels. And I guess what I'm saying is, that's just the difference in integrity between those two men. And I guess Shula calling him, Belichick might hold a little bit of water.
You don't see a guy of that stature get down in the gutter. I like to get down in the gutter, Tony. You may not have noticed over the years. Okay, I like to verbally scrap it out with people. Sometimes I make an idiot of myself. Sometimes I feel like I have the moral upper hand. But for a guy like Don Shula, he doesn't need it. He doesn't need the hassle. He doesn't need the grief. Hey, Don, you know what? People think Don Shula, oh, he's great. He's won the most games of anyone in league history. Are you kidding me? This guy is one of the all-time best coaches that ever laced him up. Belichick. That comes out of his mouth. All of a sudden, if he shows up next week in Phoenix, that's all he's going to be asked about.
Yeah.
You'd be stupid not to ask him about that. Hey, Don, a couple weeks ago, you said Bill Belichick's a big, fat, dirty cheater. Is that how you still feel? By the way, that scenario, let's say 32 head coaches found the opposing team's playbook somehow the week leading up to the Super Bowl. How many of them are not using that to their advantage? I don't know what the answer to that question is. But
I think it's a small number that don't flip
that
through.
Don't at least let's go to those red zone plays. That's good. Let's just look at 2 minute just for a second here. If we only look at 2 minute for 2 minutes, that's not cheating, right? Is it cheating? If it's cheating, certainly to take someone's playbook. Someone leaves the playbook. Let's say they leave it open to, here are our first five plays.
Lines here.
I mean,
you're blurring
is it cheating
lines.
To read the page that's left open in front of you on the table?
It's like the lie of omission here that we're talking about.
Right, well, it could be. I mean, look, if my kid were in a class and he was taking a test on a book and it was not an open book test and someone happened to have a book open or a book fell off the shelf and it's open to the exact page with the answers and he looks at it, I would say that's cheating. Right? I mean, you're not supposed to have an open book. So, look, you can look at it any way you want. I just wonder how many coaches – did Don Shula return that, or did Don Shula have the mimeograph machine work it overtime and then return it? I don't know. Look, Don seems like a pretty honorable guy. Seemed offended by the notion that Belichick would cheat. It certainly characterizes him as one. I would not – I would hope Don Shula is not throwing the proverbial stone in the glass house.
Right.
Did
he hand him the playbook back and say, I tore out 32 and 33 because those aren't going to work against us?
Those are not going to work. I dare you to try 17, by the way. Go ahead with that. All right, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times-Union joins us next live in Mobile with Senior Bowl coverage and more on the OC search as well for the Jags. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today rolls on this Tuesday morning. I'm Dempsey Fat Tony. J.P. Shattery just popping his head in. He's regulating the whiteboard. He's designing plays, diagram and stuff. He's filling the Lagerman role today. Fortunato didn't like his play calling. I don't really care. I think Shatter could take him in a fist fight, and that's really what it boils down to, Tony. That's why
as far as what you do on the whiteboard?
Yeah, sure. You know, the strength wins in
these
situations.
It's kind of the rules here in the studio.
Joe's a lover. He's not a fighter. Right. We'll get Ryan O'Halloran up here in a second. He's live in Mobile, Alabama, as John Osier put it, better than the alternative. Absolutely. Although, so I guess the alternative could be live in Jacksonville, which would be spectacular.
It's a fine alternative.
It's a great place to be. Look, all kidding aside, people tell me every year I need to get to the Senior Bowl one of these years, just with the proximity of the Super Bowl and, you know, the logistics of that trip and that week and doing all the broadcasts out there.
Sure.
I feel between Dan Hicken, Road Scout extraordinaire. And by the way, we gave him the name Road Scout. Now it's in promos.
I know.
It's in all this stuff. Where are the residuals to that? Okay. I don't see those forthcoming. Between that though, Johnny O, Ryan O'Halloran, I think we got the thing covered, from most of the angles that you need to see. I don't think us being there would change the message when Gus talks about the offensive coordinator search a whole lot.
Probably not.
It'd be fun for us to go, I think, to scout some of these players, you know, ourselves, and just kind of watch the meat grinder process that is kind of the coaching convention for the National Football League. You know, it's like baseball's winter meetings, right? You get together, and it's where a lot of guys get hired and fired and all that stuff. So you would expect. Now, I don't get the sense, Tony, that there's anybody on Seattle staff or New England staff that Gus is waiting on at this point.
No, and it's kind of cool. I did this show last night with Paul Spicer. He's heading up there, I think, today to talk, you know, network.
David Garrard's doing the same thing, going out there this week.
Network a little bit, and that's kind of what happens out there for the Senior Bowl. You're not only scouting these players, but there's a lot of guys that are, you know, shaking hands and saying hey and seeing where these staffs are right now, because there's a lot of teams that are now rebuilding what's going on inside their buildings, and that means that there's a lot of jobs that are coming open that you don't hear about, generally speaking, in the media. Yeah, you hear about, you know, head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, that kind of thing, maybe quarterback's coach, but there's a lot of staff below that on these NFL franchises, and there's a lot of jobs that come open at this time of year.
You see Johnny O writing on Jaguars.com that Tony Boselli is going to do some coaching with the offensive line this week. And Tony said he's not angling, not pushing for a job right now with the Jags or elsewhere. I wonder what kind of coach you'd make. Oftentimes, great players don't make great coaches because they don't necessarily have the patience to put up with guys who can't play to the level that they were accustomed to.
Put your arm in his throat. What?
Right, because what don't you understand about the knee right here to the inner thigh as you've got your man on the ground? What don't you understand? Ryan O'Halloran understands all that kind of stuff. That sounded like I was straight at WWE right there. He is with the Florida Times Union, a frequent co-host here on Jaguars Today, and he's live in Mobile, Alabama. What's up, Ryan? How you doing, man?
Good, fellas.
What do you get out of this week from a reporting perspective when you cover the Senior Bowl? How many Senior Bowls will this make for you covering?
This is number four, and this is the third time I've covered it where the coaching staff is one of the staff's less important parts here around them a little bit. And basically, from a Jaguars perspective, you look at their position and needs. I talked to a couple of running backs today. We talked to a couple of free safeties. So you sort of figure out, okay, who are some of the guys that they could pinpoint? And because you know they're going to draft some of them, because they did last year. They drafted four and signed a couple others. So, just a lot of short conversations. And then obviously you try and be around some of the Jaguars people to get a vibe on what's going on with them.
I want to talk to you about what you wrote earlier today for Jacksonville.com regarding Blake Bortles. But you mentioned the fact that you've had an opportunity to talk to some of the players there at the Senior Bowl already. I think running back is an intriguing position for the Jags this year in the draft, because I'm not sure they're going to address it in the first two rounds. I know you think they probably will address it there in the second round. What was your opinion of the guys that you've talked to so far?
Well, I talked to Langford, the kid from Michigan State, and I talked to Cobb, the kid from Minnesota. One thing I talked to them about was seniors with a lot of carries. Is that going to be a detriment? Does that hurt your draft stock? And you know, one of the things that they want to get across these guys is that they're durable in college. They carried in the Big Ten, which is obviously a physical conference. And, you know, they want to use this week to show that they can do the other stuff, like pick up a blitz, catch passes out of the backfield. So, you know, I'm going to be standing on the stump for a second-round running back, but if they don't go that way, I think there's some intriguing options with these guys. The decision for Dave Caldwell and his staff is, okay, you cross a guy off your list because he has 750 college carries. I don't think you can be that picky and that choosy this year.
It'll be interesting to see what the consensus draft boards look like, Ryan, as well, because I know you've talked about Melvin Gordon at that spot if he's available. I think there's a feeling that Gordon and even Todd Gurley could get into the bottom third of the first round, and I certainly don't think this team is going to trade up for a running back. So it'll be interesting to see how the board shakes out if those two are gone in the second round. You know, how much do you think the Jags will prioritize that position? I know it's impossible to say with definitively with the free agency yet to come, but do you see them in that scenario, if the truly elite guys were gone, maybe they throw a pick at it, say in the fifth round, where, you know, teams are able to find running backs from time to time?
Well, I think, you know, I think if those two main guys are gone, I think Gordon's going in the first round. And it all depends on what do you want to do with Gurley. Taking him, knowing that he could be this year's version of Aaron Colvin in terms of sitting out half the year. At that point, I don't think there's a ton of drop-offs. I would use one third round, fourth round, regardless what you trade, because you know, I think we're all in agreement they're not going to spend their money on a running back. I would think. So that's a pretty easy position to point at, is that they're going to do something in the draft with.
So for you, what other positions do you have your eye on this week?
Well, this team obviously needs some help on the punt return game, and I like Tyler Lockett, the guy that he can play a little bit slot. I mean, the receiver, the tight end need a need there, but I think they need to address the punt return spot, even though Tandon Doss is going to get a shot there. But they're always going to draft a corner. So that's going to be Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell's deal. So you look at the middle of the late rounds, who are some of the corners that are leaping off the page? And also look at the Leos, outside linebackers in college. How do they project the defensive end in a 4-3 defense? Because they're going to be given shots. And then, remember, this is where Chris Smith was last year in the Jaguars' minds. The linebacker at Arkansas, working as a pass rusher here at the Senior Bowl, had a good week and cashed in on that with a draft pick.
You mentioned the position of cornerback, and that is something that it feels like they're going to address every year. A guy who has kind of the size that Gus Bradley would be looking for, with over 6 feet, around 200 pounds, Josh Shaw, who was in the news, obviously, for the made-up story. He was running from the police, injured his ankle, said that he was actually rescuing someone from a pool. Obviously, that's a story that he's going to have to answer a lot of questions about throughout this process. But are you hearing anything about him?
Not yet, because they changed the schedule this year, so they haven't even practiced yet. They're going to practice later today. So I talked to a couple of the Jaguars assistants, and they don't even really have a feel for what they got yet. They're getting a little bit of a scouting report going in. So, but you mentioned Shaw is, his test is going to come at the combine, where he gets in those 15-minute meetings, and you better have his story straight, because these guys will find holes in it.
Right. Yeah, by the way, Mike Mayock thinks he was asked, he's a guy who played safety when he's at Florida, switched to corner exclusively at USC, and Mayock was asked, you think he's going to go back to playing safety? He said, no, 6'1", long arms. He is a press corner in today's National Football League, so we'll see if that holds true or not. You mentioned, Ryan, they drafted four guys from the Senior Bowl last year, three of them on the team that they coached, and of course Brandon Linder was on the opposite squad. How much of a look do they have at what's going on with the North team? Do they have basically the same access as any other coaching staff other than the Titans, who's not directly coaching them?
Yeah, I mean, I think their priority this week is the South team.
Sure.
Like last year, Linder, they made sure they put the Miami guys on the North team because of Jed's background. He sort of knew what they had. Like Stephen Morris was on the North team as well.
Right.
So, I think they don't have joint practices. It's the South practicing with themselves, and the North is at their own field. So, if you had more of the joint stuff, I could see that happening. But I think what they may look at is they might be able to look at the tape a little better, because they are working together in terms of what kind of stuff they're going to run during the game.
The offensive coordinator search is still going on, obviously. Have you heard anything here in the last 24 hours or so?
Well, what we're trying to pin down and sort of get stonewalled is that Adam Gase leave Jacksonville with an offer on the table. Don't know that for sure yet. So that's the thing is, okay, have they decided on one or have they decided on him if he takes it? If not, what's their plans B, C, and D? You know, we'll get to that later today, later in the week. But, I mean, it's coming to a head here, and then you got to decide, okay, what happens with some of the position coaches? Does that happen next week while they're still here? That kind of thing. And so it's a delicate balance for Gus Bradley.
Big Cat Country reported yesterday that they feel or they've heard reports that they'd like to make it a package deal possibly with Gase as the OC, with Doug Marrone maybe as a line coach, and Greg Olson possibly as QB coach or some other unspecified offensive assistant status. Are you hearing anything about that? Is there any kind of package deal that you get the sense that they're trying to maneuver to maybe go in one fell swoop and fill out the entire coaching staff or whatever changes they're going to make all at once?
Well, we've been on that in terms of, from my perspective is, I knew Doug Morrell was interviewing to be the O-line coach, but, you know, have they announced that George Arnold's not going to be back? No, they haven't.
Right.
So they want to handle that professionally. They've got the guy who had cancer. So, you know, what do you do with, the quarterback's coach? So once you get the OC in place, there's a reason Gus has interviewed all these guys. There's going to be changes elsewhere on that offensive staff.
Ryan, you had the article that you put up earlier today regarding Blake Bortles and his involvement in this process as far as looking at new offensive coordinators. Does it feel like the team is talking to him at all about this, or is he kind of inserting himself in this and taking a step forward trying to vet some of these guys for himself?
Well, I think he ran into Marrone by mistake. I asked him how involved he was. As Gus gave him updates, and he said he talked to him yesterday. I think what Blake is doing, he's doing it on his own, where he sees the, you know, he sees the name interview, and he's calling Derek Carr. He's talking to Zane Beatles about Adam Gase. So I don't think he's not directly involved with it. But I think he's, you know, what he was saying, he's looking forward to somebody getting named. So he can at least have a meeting with them, chat with them. He's not allowed to get a playbook until March. So, you know, just sort of get that process going.
I would think, Ryan, look, you're not going to say, hey, Blake, pick our next offensive coordinator. And you're not even necessarily going to say, hey, what do you like? But you know what he likes. You know what he does the best and what he feels like he will do well at in the future, what aspects of offense. So, obviously, it would make all the sense in the world, if you've got a young guy that you feel is your franchise quarterback, you're going to try to hire a guy that you feel is tailor-made to work with that specific individual, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think, you know, the quarterback background for the coordinator is key. Like when they, you know, that's, you know, all these guys that they've interviewed have some kind of, with the exception of Kirby Wilson, you know, Greg Roman worked with quarterbacks. Obviously, Greg Olson has, Adam Gase has. So I think the boxes that Gus wanted to check at the beginning of this was, had play calling experience and also has extensive experience coaching quarterbacks in particular. And I think that's the way they're headed.
All right, man. What do you got coming up in the Times Union over the next couple of days?
Well, we got tomorrow we got a couple of good things. Hayes Glenn talked to Garrett Grayson, the Colorado State quarterback, and he talked about Jim McElwain, the new Florida coach. That's an interesting story.
Okay.
And then we'll see what happens in practice today. And then also a good note from the weigh-ins today. Phil Savage basically destroyed several Florida State players for not showing up for the game, who probably just didn't call them, Rashad Green, Cam Irvin among them. And Savage told the scouts, he goes, these are guys you need to dig a little deeper on. It's me.
Wow, they just blew off the Senior Bowl. They didn't show up.
Yeah, because he listed 9 guys first and said, hey, these guys called in and said, hey, we appreciate the invite, but we're not going to play, like a couple Ohio State guys. And then he goes, these next guys, you want to dig a little deeper on? And he reeled off 9 names. It was fascinating.
Interesting. Well, Phil Savage's feelings are probably hurt a little bit. I don't know if that's quite the best way to go about it, but I understand in his position. Are you obligated to accept or decline an invitation, I guess? If you indicate that you're going and then you change your mind, I think you are, but go ahead.
I think it's common courtesy.
I'm sure. I'm sure he would feel the same way. And I mean, these guys are obviously not getting good advice, because now every move you make is going to be hyper-scrutinized in this process, yeah. whether it's, you know, going to have a long-term implication on your true character or not. Why give anybody the perception that you don't, you know, treating this as the great opportunity, not just the Senior Bowl, but this entire process leading up to the NFL draft? So that's interesting. I'll definitely look for those comments. Ryan, we appreciate it, buddy. Look forward to catching up with you later in the week from Mobile.
Okay, fellas, thanks.
All right, buddy. There he goes, Ryan O'Halloran on the Garber Auto Mall hotline from the Florida Times Union. Of course, on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran. You can follow everything happening out there in Mobile with Ryan on the scene. All right, coming up next, we'll get the fan feedback spotlight brought to you this month by Foundation Professionals of Florida, asking you, outside of the quarterbacks, which player on each team is the key player in Super Bowl 49? One for the Seahawks, one for the Patriots, and why do you feel that way? You can share your thoughts on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course on the Facebook page as well, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get into that and a quarterback comparison directly between Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. Some interesting numbers we've got for you. That's coming up on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Super Bowl QB matchup, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, kind of the focus, in a way, of the fan feedback spotlight, which we'll get to.
Sort of, yeah.
Other than those guys, who is the most important player on each team? I think there's some good candidates to choose from here, Tony. A couple of interesting things in the comparison between these two players, Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. Okay, I was looking at a story on ESPN.com. Mike Sando covers the NFC West. I guess he might cover the Seahawks specifically now. I think they've switched up their model. They're back to that, right? One guy for
Yeah, I know team. He blogs from time to time for the website.
So, quarterback records since 2010, right? Five full seasons. Since 2010, for quarterbacks who've made at least 50 starts in that period of time, they rank the records of the QBs when the opposing starter has a higher QBR score, total QBR score, right? ESPN's answer to the passing efficiency stat. Okay. Who do you think would rank highest on that list? Who overcomes the fact that they're not the best quarterback on their team the most? And who would rank lowest on that list?
So it's kind of measuring how quarterback dependent a team is.
How quarterback dependent a team is. Yes.
So like you would think, Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers are probably pretty low on that list.
Aaron Rodgers is 1-17.
They just didn't have a run game until the last 2 months of last year.
He is literally the worst quarterback in that period of time. Now, you know, that's not to say he's the worst quarterback, but in this stat, when he gets outplayed,
right,
the rest of the team is not good enough on their own to defeat anybody, basically. And now, he's also only in all those starts in all those years been outplayed 18 times. He started pretty much every game. He's missed a few due to injury.
Sure.
And Peyton Manning is 1-15 in that stretch as well.
I would think both the quarterbacks playing in the Super Bowl are really
top
high
two
on
guys,
list.
But
yeah.
Wilson is so far ahead. Russell Wilson
is great.
Which really goes to show you're evaluating Russell Wilson. He's been a phenomenal player. It's hard. I mean, he's got to get paid. Could he do it in every system? I don't know, but he does it in this system so well.
Yes, he does.
How do you not reward a quarterback who you don't have any issues of him as the face of your franchise? You don't have any work ethic issues or any of the intangibles, right? His play on the field has been stellar. He might be winning his second Super Bowl in his third season in the league. He's 12-7 in those games, 6.32 winning percentage. No one's even close to 500 but Russell Wilson in this stat. No one.
So he's played, he started 48 regular season games.
19 times he's been outplayed
seven,
by the QBR stat.
Seven, so you're talking 55 games he's been outplayed 19 times?
Right. About 40% of the time, roughly. Right. A little less than that. But he wins two-thirds of those.
Right.
Basically. 12-7. Tom Brady's 11-20. It's the next best record. So Tom Brady in the same period of time, now he's played more games than Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
But he's been outplayed on the QBR stat alone.
I bet Luck's high on that list.
31
too.
Times. Luck is next.
Because he's thrown a bunch of picks in games that he's won.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they are pretty quarterback dependent, but yeah. You're right. He has thrown a lot of interceptions, so his stats may suffer in that degree. It's interesting, though, because New England is a team, as great as Tom Brady is, that they're content to hand it off to Jonas Gray.
Sure.
Or any one of a half dozen backs in any given year.
Which is why we talk about Bill Belichick earlier in the show. That's the greatness of Belichick, and that he's got a guy like Tom Brady who, as big as Tom's ego is, and I think that he has a gigantic ego, but it's not so big that he puts himself ahead of winning. And he understands that if it means handing the ball off 30 times, that's how we're going to win this game, that's what he's going to do. And he doesn't have an issue doing that, which is why they've been so successful for so long.
Tom Brady started his second year in the league. Okay, so his first year was basically a redshirt year. So he's got that different from Russell Wilson.
Right.
Okay, throw that out and just look at the first three seasons as a starter, including the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
This is stunning how similar they are. Tom Brady's record, 40-12. Okay, it's outstanding.
That's really good.
Russell Wilson's 42-13. So he's 2-1 in those extra three games, which is, you know, actually probably statistically worse than the overall percentage. But that, I mean, that's as identical as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Okay, both been to two Super Bowls. We don't know what the outcome will be for Russell Wilson's second. Brady obviously won two Super Bowls
right
in that period of time. Passing yards, 11,591 for Brady. 11,523 for Russell Wilson. As a guy, Tony, who throws it less than most starting quarterbacks in the National Football
right.
League on a week-by-week
basis. Well, it tells you what that New England team was with Tom Brady during his first couple years, too.
True.
They weren't quarterback-dependent. They ran the ball and played defense.
No, although early in the first year Tom Brady ever missed the playoffs, led the league in touchdown passes. I don't know if there's any correlation there whatsoever. Maybe it was one of those years where they played from behind more, and he showed you, even with a David Patton led
sure.
kind of group, that he was capable of leading the league. Led the league, by the way, with 29.
Jeez.
When's the next time anyone's going to lead the league with anything,
29.
I don't know, less than 40? But this is the one that blew me away a little bit, because as much as Russell Wilson is not a prolific passer mm-hmm. in today's day and age, Tom Brady's touchdown to interception ratio.
I know Russ's is really good.
Brady's 75-41.
He didn't throw close to that many interceptions, Russell. I don't think.
82-31.
Yeah.
So not only is he throwing fewer picks, he's throwing more touchdowns
yeah.
as well. And so on a per-pass basis.
That's with, what, like four games with Percy Harvin or something like that?
I basically.
Mean, that's
right.
basically.
Yeah, Golden Tate. I mean, that was his
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
And look, Brady's crew was he didn't have Randy Moss
that.
And Welker and these guys
I
back
get that.
Then.
And I had this conversation last night. For all those people who want to say that Russell Wilson is nothing but a game manager, and that's kind of the level he's at, he doesn't belong among the great quarterbacks in today's game, well, you're going to find out. Just like when Brady was doing what he did there in his early career, for everyone who was standing there going, yeah, but he's just kind of managing what's happening with that offense, you found out that whoever thought that about Tom Brady was wrong. You know, and history has played it out that way. When everything started changing around that big piece, they stayed successful. It didn't matter what else you put around them, they stayed successful. And if Russell has that same kind of thing, which is going to be borne out over the next 4, 5, 6 years, when some of those pieces on defense are getting too old to play at the level they're playing anymore, when they have to change out everything on the offense again, when Marshawn Lynch isn't the pin in the backfield for this team anymore, if they keep winning 12, 13 games a year and keep winning in the playoffs every year, well, then everyone who thinks that Russell's just a game manager is going to have to suck it up. But until we get to that point, look, it'll play itself out on the field.
You just tell Pete Prisco to suck it up?
I did.
I thought you did.
And he may be right. Look, when all the pieces change, he may be dead on about what Russell is.
No game manager is throwing 50 more touchdowns than interceptions
I don't
in
think
his first
so either.
3 years of his career.
I don't
None,
think he's a
period.
Game manager. He's a game changer.
He's not asked to do much like Brady wasn't always asked
right.
to carry that offense. But when you gave him Moss and you gave him Welker and you gave him Dante Stallworth and they all came together in 2007, we set new standards
sure.
for passing touchdowns that year. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know if Seattle is ever going to be in a position or need to go that length. They were in an arms race with Indy at the time in terms of, you know, which offense could overtake the other offense, and they put those last few pieces into place. They kind of fell in. Randy Moss was a pariah. Remember, Randy Moss had been through Oakland at
oh, yeah.
this point in time, and was he a quitter? Did he have it? Did he have any? Yeah, he had plenty left, and I don't know if Russell Wilson, I doubt he'll ever have anything comparable to that set of skill position guys that he had in terms of the pass catcher. He's got a great running back right now.
And that's what they rely on.
Speaking of that great running back, I'm sure a few people mentioned him as the guy to watch for Seattle going into the Super Bowl.
Yes, they did. Isaiah said Gronk and Earl Thomas, the two guys he would watch outside of the quarterbacks. From Nick, Earl Thomas and Devin McCourty, playmaking safeties that shut down the middle of the field. Hashtag go get McCourty. I'm sure that's about free agency. From Big PP, most important player on their team is Belichick, and they don't win without him. From Richard, Gronk and Lynch. Hashtag I can taste the rainbow. From Eric, Cam Chancellor for Seattle, and probably someone like Gronk or Blunt for the Patsies.
I think it's Earl Thomas. Tyler, give us the breaking news. The Jaguars hired Doug Marrone.
Doug Marrone as the assistant head coach and offensive line coach.
Okay, so not as offensive coordinator. So no. that scenario where Adam Gase could be the OC is still potentially in play. But Doug Marrone, now the former head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Hopefully they got a good deal on him. The guy's collected $4 million this year.
Right.
Okay. Doug Marrone's going to come in as an assistant head coach / offensive line coach. And clearly the market wasn't what he expected it to be.
No. And apparently his interviews were terrible.
Right. Reportedly the one with the Jets was disastrous in terms of him getting the head coaching job. But he'll come in to coach the offensive line and hopefully do a really good job of that for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, we all hope for George Yarno to have a complete and speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
As possible. But, you know, the Jags, you wonder what happened. And Luke Butkus, who didn't have nearly the experience that George Yarno had. And I think Luke, certainly an effort guy. He's going to be a good coach one day. Doug Marrone's got more experience. Hopefully he's going to help shore up what is a clear area of weakness.
Look,
with this football team.
They gave up over 70 sacks. They gave up 71 sacks or whatever it is, and they drafted the first draft pick that Dave Caldwell made as a left tackle that they need to have be good. So there needs to be a priority put on whoever's going to be coaching and focusing on that group of players every single day here in the building. Doug Marrone's a guy who's been good at that to this point in his career in the NFL. Hopefully he can continue that here in Jacksonville. It wasn't good enough. What was happening here in Jacksonville wasn't good enough for what they need to develop on that offensive line.
And for me personally, the assistant head coach tag, yeah, you know, it's kind of like,
that's a guy, he's been a head coach in the league.
Right. We're going to give you that honor of that respect of being the quote assistant head coach, which kind of keeps you at a higher plane. It doesn't personally put you to have to go to the situation where you're a head coach, you walked away, and now you're going to be a position coach, not even at the coordinator level. You're the assistant head coach. I'm sure he'll try to throw his name back in the ring next year. You want all your assistants to be viable candidates for jobs elsewhere. That means they're doing a good job here. So one domino has fallen, not the main one as far as that goes.
You would
the
think
offensive
it'll
coordinator
be pretty quick.
You'd hope. I mean, I'd love to see. Look, I don't know. Some people have made the case about Adam Gase that, you know, anybody with Peyton Manning, how good can he be? Peyton Manning's running the show. Well, Jim Caldwell seems to be a pretty good coach. And he worked with Peyton Manning for a number of years. Doesn't mean you can't both have both things.
Sure.
Peyton Manning can dominate that offense, and the guy he's working with can be pretty good in his own right as well.